Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Today on The Grave Talks, the hauntings of the historic Monroe Theater. On December 2nd, 1939, the Monroe Theater opened in Woods Field, Ohio. Everyone who was anyone played at the theater back in the day. It was an operating theater until January 1977 when they closed the doors, and it sat empty for 43 years. Except for those who never left. It's said that some of its former employees still like to help out around the theater, moving items, playing music, and even messing with the projectors. I'm Carol Hughes, and on this episode of The Grave Talks, we'll talk with Rick Brown, theater and stage manager of the Monroe Theater. Can you give me an idea, where is Woods Field, Ohio?
Woods Field, Ohio is in the far southeastern corner of the state. We're in Appalachia, which that's actually a pretty big area. But we are about 1 hour south of Wheeling, West Virginia. We're about 1 hour north of Marietta, Ohio, and we're about 45 minutes southeast of Cambridge. And that's pretty much in the middle of nowhere. If you draw a triangle between those three places, it just looks like it's nowhere. But when you get here, here we are.
It sounds like it's a beautiful area.
It is. It's very rural. A lot to see here. Our parks and stuff here are just absolutely beautiful. Have waterfalls, covered bridges, lakes. We've got some campgrounds and stuff in the county. I mean, it is a really nice place to be.
And what do you do with the theater? What's your association?
I actually came here as a volunteer in 2019. And in about 6 months, they asked if I would take over the role of stage manager and theater manager at that time. I wasn't really expecting that, but they saw that I had the knowledge to take the ball and run with it. And I'm primarily responsible for getting the entertainment here and taking care of contracts and making sure all the T's are crossed and I's dotted and all that kind of stuff.
And this is a working theater now, correct? There are productions.
And what makes one thing really unique about our theater, we are right in the middle of total renovation, and we are still in operation. You know, we're down to the bare brick walls and cut stone, and the people that come here, they just absolutely love the Monroe Theater. They have begged us to leave the walls as they are. They like the warehousey look it gives you. But ultimately we do have to cover those back up because we're in the process of wrapping up, having it deemed as a historical landmark. And once we do that, everything has to be original.
Right. So now the theater, this is interesting to me. So I looked at pictures of it. It's an Art Deco style theater.
Yes.
And they opened it in 1939.
Yes.
And I thought that was really an interesting time because that's the tail end of the Great Depression. So was that one of those projects that they built, you know, libraries and things around the country? Was it a public works? Yeah. Was it part of that?
No, it actually wasn't. The lady that built this, her name was Mena Fleeman, M-E-N-A. A person like her, or a lady, I'm sorry, like her, was absolutely unheard of. She was a very successful and aggressive businesswoman. Now, you imagine in 1939, women were just not accepted as such. And she was a kind of a business shark around here. And the theater actually used to be a huge department store back in the early 1900s. And she bought it out of bankruptcy. It closed due to the Depression. And she opened the Monroe in 1939. December 1939, it opened its doors. The Underpup was the first movie shown here. And by 1940, it was known as one of the hot spots for entertainment and one of the most notorious theaters in the tri-state area.
And using the word notorious, was it just because it was well known? That wasn't a negative thing, right?
No, it was a well-known theater. We were actually the hub or the center. And the reason for that is she owned three theaters. And one was the Roxy Theater in Caldwell, Ohio. And the other was called the Capitol Theater in Blair, Ohio. And they are both, the buildings are still there, but the Roxy is now it's been remodeled and is a Department of Motor Vehicles licensing facility. And the one in Blair is just boarded up. And being that they lived here in Woodsfield, they considered this their home theater. And it was kind of the hub. All the operations for all three ran through this theater. And in fact, when she broadened her horizons, I guess, to bring musical entertainment in and other forms of entertainment, she actually created a company in 1940 that was called the Woodsfield Amusement Company. And we actually still use that name today. We actually have a sign in here for arcade. That our arcade in the theater is actually ran under the Woodsfield Amusement Company.
And who has played there over the years? I thought I saw in a video that you have a case of different photos and artifacts in there.
We do. We are, being that we're about 54 miles from Wheeling, West Virginia, virtually every single one of the original Wheeling Jamboree stars have played here. People like Hawkshaw Hawkins and Wilma Lee and Stoney Cooper and Toby Stroud from Wheeling, they all played here. Hawkshaw Hawkins played here very regular until he went on to become a member of the Grand Ole Opry. He still played here after that, but it was not as often because he was on tour due to being an Opry member. But we've had Minnie Pearl's been here, Grandpa Jones, Roy Acuff, Ernest Tubb, Patsy Cline has been here, String Bean, Flattin' Scruggs, Bill Monroe. You know, some of the biggest names in Nashville have been here on our stage over throughout the decades it was open. And you know, and then it wasn't just country and bluegrass music either, because they also featured like Hollywood stars, the Cowboys. Roy Rogers was here, Roy Rogers and Dale Evans, Gene Autry, Tex Ritter, just about all the Cowboys. And there's some people that are still living that can remember when Roy Rogers came here and they laid wood planks down on the stairs and he brought Trigger in and walked right up on the stage. And that was a big to-do, things that people remember. We had magicians here. The world's tallest man was here in town. It was just like the Fleeman family. Mina started this off that there was, the sky was the limit. There wasn't anything that they were afraid to bring in here. And they did bring a lot of things here. And that's what we're trying to do today. In today's world, our theater is so outside the box compared to any theaters, because we do functions and events here that are just unheard of in a theater.
Okay, so I have to ask, what kind of things do you do there now?
We use this building for everything. We have youth night DJ dance parties here once a month for the kids. We've installed an arcade. We have pool tables, air hockey.
So it's way more than just a theater. Really, it's a multi-purpose facility these days.
Absolutely, it is. It's basically a family entertainment facility, more so because we are just so broad in everything we do. We started a program here at Christmas time that the community really got behind, where we wanted to display statues at Christmas out on the streets from approximately, just guessing, late 1800s, early 1900s era. But we didn't want to do like the Dickens Christmas Carol theme. We wanted it to be personal. So when you see our Christmas statues out, they each mean something, like they represent a doctor that was here, or like we have a coal miner that represents the coal mines that were in the county. An awesome military display. Christmas statue project basically is a way for us to share our story with other people. They can walk around and visit the statues and see the little descriptions on each one that explains, you know, what they are, who they represent, who it's in memory of, and who it was donated by and all that. And it's been a really, we thought maybe we would put out 8 or 10, and that rapidly went to 120.
Oh, my goodness. Now, how long did the theater sit empty? Did it sit empty for a while?
The theater was actually dormant longer than it was in operation.
Really?
The theater operated full steam from December of 1939 until January of 1977. And then it was used for an antique shop for a little bit, and they had a couple auctions in here and different things. But pretty much it sat for like 43 years of nothing.
And when that happened, like when the antique store went in, obviously the stage was still in place. Did they leave the chairs? Do you have those old chairs in there?
They took the chairs out.
Okay.
And unfortunately, they thought it was a great idea to store them in the basement. But what they didn't have, because they operated here just in the daytime and they didn't really need light, so there was no electric. So they didn't have sump pumps in the basement filled with water and destroyed the seats.
Yeah, that would, because those were probably cloth and metal.
They were.
Yeah.
And however, we really lucked out early on in our process. Once the theater was donated to the Arts Council, I cannot think of the name of the theater. I'm sorry. There's a theater in Columbus. It's absolutely beautiful downtown. It's their historic theater. They did a complete modernization upgrade, and they removed all of the Palace Theater. That's the name of it. And they did, they replaced all of their seating. And in 2016, the Palace Theater in Columbus donated 600 metal and red velour seats to the Monroe,
which would have looked very much, I'm going to guess, like the ones that you had in there. That was kind of standard for theaters of that time.
Yes, very similar. They were so close, it was, you know, we could go with it. You know, this theater, now, they were a little narrower, because it's kind of mind-blowing. We have like standard chairs sitting here now because we're in renovation process. And we often need to take those chairs away so we can get to the ceiling or get lifts in and different things, or scaffoldings. But this theater seated 400 originally, and it was one level. And now we seat 300. And to stop and think the difference, you know, look, I'm thinking, you know, squeeze another 100 seats in here. Those were tiny seats, but they were a lot smaller, because back in the 30s and 40s, people weren't as large as they are today.
That's so true. And that's a problem with most historic theaters, is the original seating really doesn't fit many average-sized people today.
No, now that's one of the things that we're looking at as we're actually we just got some grants and things to do upgrades, and one of those upgrades is going to be a balcony that will seat another 250 upstairs. We've never had a balcony before, but they agreed to let us install one. It just has to have the Art Deco look, and when they're done, it has to look like it was here when it was built. Of course, the contractor said that was no problem.
I am fascinated by theaters, and because I'm connected to them, I write plays. And so I'm writing a play right now. It goes in production in July. And it's the whole process. I've discovered that it seems like most older theaters are haunted. I think it's because even if it's not a stage performance like a play with actors and all of that, anybody who's on that stage, that's who they are. That's what they're passionate about. You talk about Roy Rogers, look at his life, and they live to perform. And then there's people behind the scenes, like the stage managers, the box office people, the sound guy. There's so many, the costumer, the props person. There's just so many people who are so connected to what they do there that I see why you wouldn't want to leave. That I see why it makes sense to me why a theater is haunted.
When I think of that, my original thoughts, I don't know why. I guess it's a fascinating thing to me. When I think about the haunting or paranormal things that we have that go on here, it takes me back to a movie called M Music of the Heart, and it stars Meryl Streep. When Meryl Streep visited Carnegie Hall with the group of children, he was talking about you. If you listen in dead silence, you could hear the music. He's like, over here, you can hear Pavarotti doing his first performance over here. And if you listen up there, you can hear Bach introducing a new piece that he had just created. And I think that makes me feel kind of like where we are with the Monroe. And I say, our situation is very, very unique. We've had some top of the line, true investigation teams that have been here. One of our most common is actually Belmont County Spirit Seekers. They visit quite frequently to kind of keep us updated, and they're helping us make sure that our investigations and things like that don't get down the wrong path.
That's important.
They told us, they advised us against, don't let people do seances, don't let them bring in Ouija boards, don't do this, don't do that. And we've taken that very seriously. When they came to investigate, when they finished their investigation, the ladies told us that the reveal, they said, you have a very unique situation in your theater because there's nothing negative here. They said your theater is very, very active, and it is. It's very active, but what you have here are like people that have worked here. That's what how they were taking it. She said everything is so pleasant. The EVPs and stuff they got, they recorded one. The EVPs they've gotten here have been crystal clear. They interacted with one entity, and they asked its name, and he said, "I am Vincent." And well, that meant nothing to them or nothing to us. And we had one of the Fleeman family's grandchildren here for the reveal, and she said, "Well, let me call my aunt and see if that means anything." So she did, and her aunt says, "Oh my gosh, Vincent worked there in the 1950s. He ran projector and he was an usher." And she gave us this whole rundown on Vincent, which none of us knew anything about. Immediately, I jumped on eBay and I looked for a 1950s usher vest, and I found a red usher's corduroy vest and excellent shape, and we ordered a gold nameplate that said Vincent, and we thought we would just hang it upstairs just as a kind of a joke type thing, but let people know it was there and let them know that we did that. Well, not expecting anything to happen, when I told the ladies about that, they asked if they could have that. They would like to interact with the spirits or whatever here. And I said, of course. So when they came back, they had contacted Vincent again, and they explained to him, they said, do you realize the theater appreciates you being here? They appreciate your help. They appreciate your dedication. They bought you this vest to show their appreciation. He said, thank you. There's also been a man that they've interacted. They actually got a still shot, unexpected camera shot of a male figure standing on stage during their investigation that they didn't even see. When we posted it on our page, a follower actually pointed out, she messaged us and said, who's the guy standing on stage? And I had to zoom in. And when I did, obviously I saw it. Well, then they pulled the picture. They looked at everything to make sure it hadn't been tampered with. No, it was in fact the original picture. Right where that figure appeared on stage, they have picked up EVPs that have said, welcome, hello. The stuff here is very intelligent. You know, just trying to get a rise out of something. They walk out into our front lobby one night with their recorders and cameras on, and the lady says, I wonder what goes on out here. And as soon as she said it, her response that she got back was pizza. And they were basically telling her that we sell pizza out there, which we do. Like I say, they're very intelligent. We think they're people that have been here or love the theater. And this is their home. A lot of people would think I'm crazy, but I have actually come to the point of interacting with them. Because until we had the investigators in here, we weren't thinking it was a haunting or anything like that. But we would have situations that doors would open or close, or we couldn't find this or that, or, you know, a light may flash or flicker, or, you know, just some odd things. You would hear a sound and not sure what it was. And then once the investigators approached us and they started presenting us with all this information that they had discovered, then we started realizing, okay, maybe we do have something going on. I say they're super smart, because we show a matinee movie here every Tuesday for senior citizens. Every Monday night, I pull the movie for the next day and put it in a specific spot. And then I come in and everything's ready to go. Well, I went through about 5 weeks that I would come in and the movie was missing. But then we would find it the next day. We had to show something else, but we would find it the next day. And they said, you might be getting played with. So when they explained to me what happened, I said, okay, guys, come on. You know, we're showing a movie. We really need this. And I would appreciate it if you don't do that and hide it from us. And it's never happened since. And I, after about 2 weeks, I actually came in and I start talking to them. You know, I said, I want to thank you for not hiding the movies. I appreciate it. We understand you're here. We appreciate your help. And it seems to go along very well. I've gotten to the point that when I come in every morning, I'll come in and I'm like, good morning, everybody. Happy Monday or happy Tuesday, whatever it may be. This is what we have going on today. We've got some kids coming in to see you. They're going to watch a movie today. Or, you know, we've got the senior citizen coming in today to watch a movie. We've got this show that we're getting ready for. I just wanted to let you know. And we appreciate everything you're doing for us. And then at night, you know, I always make a point to say, thank you so much for all your help today. I'm going to leave you alone now, and I'm going to go home. I hope you all have a good night. And I leave. And I actually have a very, very pleasant feeling all the time, you know, when I'm here. Little things will happen. We had interference, horrible interference with the projector a while back. It was brand new. There was no explanation whatsoever. We would talk about it, and it would just messing up, you know, putting lines and stuff on the screen. And I don't know what made me think of it. And this has been quite a while ago. I don't know what made me think of it, but I actually thought, okay, I'll bet I know what it is. So I take off and I go upstairs and I go in there and I sit down on a stool in the projector room. I'm like, okay, guys, look, I want to explain something to you. This box that you're seeing, and I pointed to our projector. I said, this box is our projector. It's not the kind of projector that you are accustomed to, like these here, that we don't use anymore. We can't use these anymore because we can't get the films and equipment to use them. However, we want to leave them here for you, but we have to use this new digital, probably looks like a spaceship kind of thing to you, but this does the same thing that these do, only it's 80 years later. And I said, I would appreciate it. I said, please don't bother this machine and don't interfere with it. I know you can. And we see that. I said, but please don't do that. We have never had an issue since with the projector.
I love how respectful you are to them.
I always try to be. Because the way I look at it, we're the guests. This is their house. And I've even told them, you know, when we have the investigation teams come in, like we have a group coming in Saturday night, I always prepare them for that before the team gets here. And I always tell them, if you guys ever want us to stop, let's figure out a way for you to let us know. And if you want us to stop having people come in, we will do that. We're not trying to put you on a display. People are very interested. They want to learn about you, and that's why they're coming in here. And I said, I also understand from our ladies, because it's amazing when these ladies walk in the door, all their little EMF readers and their little alarms and different things they have. They did a test a couple times when they arrived, and as soon as they walk in the door, the stuff starts going off. And it's like, it's almost like these entities know they're coming, which they do because they do now, because we always tell them. But it's, even without us, it's like they know they're coming and they're at the door to greet them when they arrive. But I told them, I said, the ladies that you love so much, explain to us that you also have the power to make people leave. And I said, please understand. I said, you absolutely have our permission. I said, this is your house. You absolutely have our permission to do so. You know, they've suggested that there be no seances, no Ouija boards. And if you see that they're doing something wrong, absolutely, you have our permission to put them out, and we appreciate that. And believe it or not, we have had two groups that were here about an hour. We have no idea what happened. They didn't say, they won't talk about it, but both groups ran out of the theater, don't want to come, and we're not exactly sure why, because they just won't discuss what they encountered. But we've had a couple groups that one was scared to death, but at the same time he was really excited. He asked if they were able to play music, and this was about midnight one night, and he called me at home, out of breath. You could tell he was just in a panic. And I came to the theater to make sure everything was okay. And when I got here, I said, okay, what's going on? And he said, well, he said, I don't want you to get upset. He said, my mom didn't come with us. He said, but we had her kind of on like FaceTime. And she was telling us some things to do, asking different things. And he said, one of the things was, could they play us a song? And I said, okay. And he said, we started on to something else. And he said, about 40 seconds later, he said, this music started playing. And I said, what kind of music was it? And he said, oh, you know, it's something my grandparents would have listened to. And I said, well, that's really interesting. I said, we've heard that before, but none of us have ever experienced it. It scared him to death when it happened, but after the fact, he realized how fortunate he was to have that happen. He had asked, And he said, it didn't happen immediately. And I said, it doesn't. I said, a lot of times I said, you know, based on how much energy the entity might have or whatever, I said, it takes them a second or two to respond. You can't expect them to be as quick as we are. I said, I've learned that from all these investigators that we've talked to and learned from. He said, well, that makes a lot of sense.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the Monroe Theater. You can get more information about their events, including paranormal investigations, at their Facebook page, the Haunted Historic Monroe Theater, or at their website, historicmonroetheater.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and you can try it 3 days free. You can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there, also all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.